WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. I'm your host, Wes Moss, with an active Sunday morning, the first Sunday in August, and we are awake and we are talking about money and trying to figure out a market that has been kind of in no man's land all year. We had a positive week and kind of a rebound week this past week with some news, not a tremendous amount of groundbreaking or earth-shattering news, but there's a lot going on in the world. Second quarter GDP comes in. So let's go quickly through some highlights, lowlights, and we'll go to the phones. By the way, the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll get to the phones in just a second. Second quarter GDP, better than, I'd call this better than okay, a 2.3% rise GDP. First quarter, by the way, was revised to a paltry 0.6%, but better than the negative 0.2 that it was revised from. So it was up 0.6 instead. So at least we're slowly moving forward according to these governmental gross domestic product figures. Sentiment. I like this. This is a highlight. Sentiment is still really poor in the market. So investors have yanked $11.5 billion out of stock funds. And this is just this past week, right? This is a couple weeks ago, but then for the latest data, over $11 billion coming out of stock funds. That's the worst we've seen, or the most money getting pulled out of stock since 2011. So that's obviously not great, and it doesn't support stock prices. The good news is there, though, that there's not a greed seeping into this market, at least just yet. And then that's when we start to see trouble. Again, I've told you many, many times that when we see euphoria and greed, like we saw in China, that's why for so long, I talked about how this was an obvious bubble in China. And of course, it absolutely has popped. And this week was another example that their market there is completely imploded. That was an obvious bubble where it was a hockey stick north and there's this euphoria for investors. We don't see that right here in the United States. And that's important. So no greed seeping into the market or the U.S. market just yet. Housing starts for June up almost 10%. That's a strong number. This week, earnings, Facebook up 39% in quarterly profits, which is a big number, obviously, but down 3% on the week. Twitter down 12% on the week. Amazon up 1.25% on the week. But if you go back to the beginning of this year, some really dramatic divergences within tech. Again, very much a feast or famine. Year-to-date, Twitter down 13%, Facebook up 20%. So just complete divergences between these two companies. And then, of course, if you've been shopping online in Amazon and you've been owning that stock, it's been a wonderful year, up 72%. 72% on the year, which, again, a very much a winner-take-all scenario. At least that's what the market has been showing us as of late. A rough week for big blue chip companies like Exxon, P&G had a rough week, Chevron had a rough week, but overall, markets up. S&P up 1%, up now 2% year to date, only up about 0.75% for the Dow, but the Dow is still down 0.75% for 2015. Federal Reserve comes out and says, hey, look, we still need to see some, that was the word, that's getting a lot of attention. We need to see some improvement before we raise rates. So it looks like, and then the economic data coupled with that we got this week, instead of September for liftoff, as far as the Fed doing that first move to raise interest rates, probably looking more like December. Earnings this week, Pfizer, big numbers, Ford big numbers. That stock up 3%, Pfizer up 5%. 355 companies in the S&P 500 have reported. So that's 71%, 73. So 3/4 companies have beat expectations, 20 have missed. Probably a more important number that I'm looking at, though, it has to do with revenue. And about 50% of companies have beaten on the upside when it comes to selling. Sales have been relatively good, at least 50%. So that's, you don't want to just see earnings through cost cutting. You want to see earnings through growth, and we're getting at least some of that. Again, must-see TV comes back this Thursday. Donald Trump GOP debate is something that we all need to be watching. And then Friday, of course, the jobs report for the month of July. We've averaged 208,000 new jobs per month so far in 2015. Unemployment rate at 5.3%. Those are the highlights. That's the good news. The bad news is, and this isn't changing the world, it's just kind of silly to see that we're going to have the Winter Olympics in 2020, just announced this week. 2020 Winter Olympic Games in Beijing, China? They don't even know how to make snow there. So that's kind of an interesting thought. Brazil in the 2016 Games, so next summer, this time next summer, August 5th through the 21st in Rio, according to the AP, swimmers and boaters face almost certain illness from the local polluted waters. That's a little confusing to me because I don't see why swimmers are in those polluted waters. Certainly the rowers would be, but I don't understand the swimmer side of that. Anyway, Shanghai Composite this week, just in one day, down 8.5% on Monday, down 10% on the week, down 14% in July. This is what China does, evidently, according to Ann Stevenson Yang, who is an analyst with J Capital, in talking about getting the Winter Olympics in Beijing. By the way, it's the first city to have host both winter and summer. So you'll have about a 14-year break in between the two. But it's pretty interesting to see that it's almost as though an economy like China or a government like China needs almost this propaganda to have an event where they can direct all of their, they can direct everything towards this event. It's good for the people's psyche. It's good for their economy there. So they have the 2008 Summer Games. All this money gets pumped into getting ready for that. Then 2009, no let up. The 60th anniversary of the 1949 Revolution. Then 2010, the Shanghai Expo. So it's kind of like this, an opiate for the economy and an opiate for the sentiment of the people. And it's very much what China does. Then you also, what do we have here? Ryan just says, keep going. Okay, I'll do it. Then we'll get to the phones here. This is where we're starting to see an impact through for low oil prices. So we've had this dramatic drop in commodity prices, of course. Gold's been crushed over the last couple of years. Oil prices obviously are down tremendously. Now they're back into the under 50 range. But we see a company, so we're finally seeing some huge layoffs. So Chevron, not huge, down. They just announced they're going to lay off 1,500 people. Not a huge amount for a big company like Chevron. But Royal Dutch Shell shedding 6,500 jobs. That's a big number. But listen to this number. The big metals mining metallurgical company, Anglo-American, based out of really London and Johannesburg, really one of the largest mining companies on the planet, dropping 53,000 jobs. Yeah, you heard me correctly. 53,000 jobs. I had to go, when I read a stat like this, I always have to go back and read the, I have to go to Wikipedia and look up, see how many people they really have. Well, that's a real number. Anglo-American as a company has about 100,000 employees. So they're shedding about half the workforce. So that wasn't a typo. That's a real number. And it's because of this just absolute drought we're seeing in commodity prices, oil prices, metal prices. Anglo-American as a company, of course, is one of the biggest producers on the planet for platinum, diamonds, copper, nickel, iron ore, you name it, and they produce it. And commodity prices lower means they're shedding jobs. 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. We're going to go to the phones here. We'll start with Karen, who joins us from Suwannee. Karen, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Hey, I am the financial power of attorney for my mom, who's in hospice, and she has been kind enough to plan for her grandchildren. She has over 600 shares of Home Depot stock, which I heard you speak about previously, that she's going to be leaving to her 5 grandchildren.
Wow.
But what happens if some of the grandchildren want to sell the stock and some of them want to keep it? Because I heard you say, you know, it's something you should hang on to for, you know,
a long time.
Right. So how would you go about that?
So she is leaving 600 to them or has already gifted it to them?
No, it's bequested to them in her will.
Oh, okay. Well, so we're a couple of thoughts here. Number one, in this scenario, when the kids inherit Home Depot, or the grandkids inherit Home Depot, they will get what's called a step up in basis. So when they get shares, regardless of the price that your mother or their grandmother purchased Home Depot at, even if her basis is $2 a share, they're going to get this new stock in what's called a step up in basis, and that means they'll inherit it at $110, $120 a share. Then it's all in their individual names because each one of them will get their own piece of that. And then it's obviously up to them. So they're not going to, none of them will have a real taxable event or much of a taxable event if they want to go ahead and sell it because they're going to inherit it. They're going to get what's called a step up in basis. And then they'll probably be able to sell it. If they wanted to sell it right away, they can effectively sell it at virtually no gain. Okay. The kids that will be the wealthy ones in the future are the ones that don't sell it. And those at that point, they will, again, establish that new basis. And in hopefully 20 years, when Home Depot's at $200 a share, then if they choose to sell it, their cost basis will be around where it is, obviously, when they inherit it, which call that the 110, 120 level. So, okay. Again, it's all going to go to them separately, and they're going to be able to make their own decisions. But the ones that really do want to sell it, there really shouldn't be much of a tax implication because of the step up. So, Karen, thanks for the call. Have a great rest of your Sunday. We've got to go to a quick news, weather, traffic. Then lots of more great questions on hold that we'll get to here on Money Matters on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, to take your calls and questions. Cindy joins us from Alpharetta. Cindy, good morning. How can we help? What's going on?
Hi. I have some. My dad passed away in December, and he left me some money, and I wanted to put it away for retirement since we don't have anything for retirement. So I wanted to put it away, and I wanted it to be, obviously, you know, I'm 50. My husband's like 52, so I wanted to be not. I think we need to go more conservative at this point. I mean, I don't know what your opinion is.
Well, Cindy, at 50, that still sounds pretty young to me. Meaning, it's obviously you don't want to have 100% in stocks, but if your retirement is, let's call it 10 to 15 years out,
right?
Then you don't want it to be too conservative. Was the money left to you in stock? Is it in bonds? Is it?
No.
The composition.
Well, some of it's in an annuity right now. It's in different places. My parents had it in different places. I mean, some of it's in savings. Some of it's in annuity. Some of it's in a different little account. I'm not really sure what they're called. But it adds up to about $200,000. So just the fact that we don't have anything already set up for retirement. I just didn't know how conservative to go or what to do.
Well, Cindy, my thought here is this. If you guys are only 50, you've got, again, a really long horizon here. I don't think you should have anything less than about 50%, 50% in the equity side of the stock side of the market. Now, if you're relatively new to investing, and that sounds as though it's going to freak you guys out for a little while, or it's too much, then at least you've got to get started with some, let's call it 30 or 40%. You know what? We've got to go to a quick break. I want to continue to talk this through. We don't have quite enough time right now. So hang on for me, Cindy. We'll talk more about this. You're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News on WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates four times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 tonight for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Okay, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. A lot of work, a lot of wood left to chop here this morning. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. I wanted to go back to Cindy. Cindy, are you still with me?
Yes.
We had one of those short segments, so I couldn't really get to my answer. You, as we remind people here, you just inherited some money. You're 50, so you're starting to think about retirement, and you've inherited this 200-some thousand, so it's a lot of money. But you're fairly new to investing, and you don't want to blow it, and you don't want to be too aggressive with it, because you feel as though you're getting a little closer. You're still a little ways out,
right?
And what have you owned, mutual funds or stocks or anything in the past?
Not really.
Here's what's going to happen. So let me give you a couple choices. Choice A, simple. Here's the simplest, lowest cost route. You go to Vanguard and you look at something like the Vanguard Target Retirement 2015 fund. Vanguard Target Retirement 2015. That gives you five different Vanguard funds. They're all bundled into one. Half of them are stock funds. Half of them are bond funds. You got Vanguard Total Stock, Vanguard Total Bond, International Bond, and then they have a TIPS fund, Treasury Inflation Protected. That's an easy one-stop shop for a new investor. Now, you're not going to talk to anybody at Vanguard and get advice on what to do, but at least you can go there and use something like that and have a balance in a low-cost way. What I really don't want to see you do would be option B, where you go to a big brokerage firm and most big brokerage firms don't really want to talk to you if you've got under at least $500,000. A lot of firms are under $1 million. And they'll end up, and because you're in that range, they'll end up selling you some expensive product. So the way that a lot of times what I see happen, because you're not a huge investor, they need to charge you more so they can make money off of you like they would on a bigger client. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was wondering if I should go to a fee-only financial planner or if this is something I could do on my own.
Well, hold on. Okay, so the Vanguard option is on your own. The second option would be, if you don't go to a big brokerage firm, but go to NAPFA, N-A-P-F-A, .com or .org, and that'll show you lots of fee-only planners wherever you live. I think you're in Alpharetta, right?
I am.
You'll have planners right around you in Alpharetta. You'll have them obviously in Atlanta, all over the place. And call two or three of them at least and talk through what options they have for an investor at your stage of the game with around $200,000. All right? That's option B. Option C would be to go to a place like Wella. I don't know if you've heard me talk about Wella. I'm a part of this company in full disclosure, but it's a financial technology company that has low cost index fund or ETF portfolios with advice. So it's kind of what, if you're looking at a cost perspective and a how much handholding or actual advice you get, it's a rung above. If you're walking up this ladder of advice and cost, go a step above where you would be at Vanguard. So you're not going to meet with an advisor every quarter, but you're going to have a real human to give you advice on a low cost, on the right low cost portfolio. So that's, that website, Cindy, is Your Wella, Y-O-U-R, Wella, W-E-L-A. Wella just is an old English word for wealth.
Okay.
And then you can walk through a couple of different low-cost ETF portfolios, a lot like Vanguard's Target Retirement Fund, but also get some financial planning done, understand what you're investing in, and actually get some advice from a human, in addition to using technology to have a low-cost portfolio. And then the human is supposed to also help keep you on track. So that's what these new digital, there's a lot of new, what are called digital advisors out there. There's another company called Wealthfront. There's a company called Betterment. Those, they're very much technology-oriented to get you going as an investor at any stage of the game. So if you have $50,000 or $200,000, in a really low-cost manner. The problem with a lot of, these are called robo-advisors, Betterment and Wealthfront, is that you're really just doing everything online and there's no human interaction. The Wella will at least give you the human side of the interaction in addition to having technology bring the cost down of investing. So that's my, those are three options. Do it yourself, go to Vanguard, do a target fund. B, find another fee-only advisor around you, go talk to them. C, go to a place like Your Wella and talk to one of our advisors at Wella or one of the advisors there, or online, find a balance, one of the portfolios that might make some sense for you. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. There are so many different calls on hold here. This is a lot of fun. We're going to go to Kevin, who joins us from Lawrence. So, Kevin, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Good morning. Yes, I had a daughter, 28 years old, a school teacher, return home, quit her job. She's going to go teach in Italy. She
The poor daughter.
I know.
She's got to go to Italy.
No, it's the poor dad here. Here's the problem.
wait, Kevin. Where is she going in Italy?
Just outside Venice.
I don't really know what that looks like there, but I'm sure it's amazing. Keep going.
Okay. So a year ago, on her own, she went out, purchased a used 2011 Toyota Corolla, set it up on a 60-month payment plan, $268 a month, and she took this job without thinking about what she's going to do with the car. So it looks like in a couple of weeks it's going to be my problem. So I just wondering if you had any ideas. So I think the car is probably worth $8,500.
And what does she owe on the car?
$13,000.
How is she underwater on a Toyota Corolla, for goodness sake?
Well, that's sort of what I said, but it is what it is. I think they bad deal up front, but so I was wondering what are the ramifications if she just walks away from it, or is there any way you know of to take care of this?
Couple of questions here. How long is she going to go to Italy for, Kevin?
2 years and maybe longer.
Wow, 2 years. So she's not coming back.
No.
Man, wow. First of all, there is no magic. There's nothing magical here that you can go have somebody take this car and get rid of the underwaterness. If it were a lease and she had a couple years left and she was moving, she could maybe go to a swap a lease or lease trader or one of these programs where you can find somebody else to take over your payments, like a sublet of a car. Here, if she owns it and she has the debt, then there's nothing she can do. She's got to sell the car or keep it and keep making the payments. There's no way to erase what sounds to me like about $5,000 in negative equity is what this is.
Yes.
So if she walks away, she's going to blow up her credit. She absolutely doesn't want to do that. She stops making payments, then somebody's going to come to your house to get her car, and you're going to end up on one of these repo reality shows. So you don't want to do that either.
Okay.
Somebody's going to have to just eat the $5,000.
All right.
What kind of car do you have? Why not sell your car and drive the Toyota?
Well, I'm a little bit too big for that Toyota, but that was another option.
That's funny because Corollas are pretty. They are pretty tiny.
Yeah.
What kind of car do you have?
I've got a Chevy Impala.
That is a big car. It's a happy retiree car, so you don't want to sell that one anyway.
Yeah.
My thought is this: the payments really are. And do you have any? Let's see, she's 28, so you probably don't have any grandkids, do you? And they're certainly not old enough to drive.
No, we don't have any grandkids. I do have a third-year student getting ready to start a third year at Georgia, but we got her set up in a little car that you know, is great with gas mileage. And we just bought that maybe 5 months ago.
And that one's not under, is that relative?
No, I bought that. That's my car. I mean, I just bought it, so.
And what kind of car is that?
Toyota Yaris.
Well, why don't you see, so if the Yaris is, doesn't have negative equity, sell the Yaris and let that one be flat. At least you get your money back.
Okay.
And then have the other, your other daughter drive the Corolla, which is only $260 a month, which is about as inexpensive as a car payment as you can get.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. That's, yeah, I'll definitely look into, so I'll see what I can get out of the Yaris for that. So.
You're probably flat on the Yaris, I would think, if you just got it. It's probably not that negative, or if it is, it's a couple $100. Maybe it's $1,000. Adam Goldfein is about to come in the studio. He would know. He's a super car expert in addition to politics. But that would be my thought, is that, say, look, tough luck. You need a car. The Corolla is still good. We don't want to eat $5,000. I mean, gosh, that's a semester somewhere.
Yep.
And it's still a really reasonable payment. I'd probably sell the Yaris and have the next daughter drive the Corolla, or you just have your daughter take the medicine, which I doubt she has the $5,000 to give you for the underwaterness.
Well, you know, she has zero money. But that was my question, is what exactly happens to the credit when you just tell the credit union to come get the car? What happens?
You're talking about it's going to get crushed. I mean, she'll probably lose 100 points on her credit, at least, on something like that. She'll have a really rough credit score. That it's just not worth doing it, even if she comes back. And who knows? I think that what'll happen is that Italy will be, it's a 7-year mark on her credit. So
Okay. Even
if she's only there 2 years, she's got 5 years of bad credit here in the United States. She's probably going to go over there. It's going to be this wonderfully romantic place for 6 months, and then she's going to miss America. So she's going to come back and not be over there for a full 2 years. And she's going to really, she's not going to want to have credit she don't want to have a 500 credit score.
Okay.
When she gets back. So we're trying to make lemons here, we're trying to make lemonade out of some lemons. I think we're getting close, but it's your job to make the rest of the cocktail, my friend. But thanks for the call. Very interesting call. First call in a while we've had about someone moving to Italy. In a while. First call ever. 404-872-0750. We'll go to a break. We've got a lot of other questions. I don't even know if we have a trivia prize pack. We do not have one. So we have more time for more calls, which we will do straight after news, weather, traffic, right here on Money Matters. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. We have a little bit of time and a lot of calls, and we're going to get to these almost like a lightning round. Sean in Marietta, good morning. How can we help?
Hey, good morning, Wes. Hey, I'm in the military, and I have a thrift savings plan. Right now, I'm 40 years old. I have 70% in the I fund and 30% in the T fund. And I have about 13 to 15 years before I retire. What's your recommendation? Am I close to where I should be on what percentage I'm putting into each fund?
From my perspective, I would say no, just because I see where you're headed here. So the great thing about TSP, it's really simple. It's really only five funds. It's GF and then CSI, as in CSI, Crime Scene Investigation. That's how I remember it. G is just a government bond fund. F is a general overall bond fund with some corporate bonds in it. And then C is large cap, common stock. S for small, I for international. I don't think you want to have 70% in international, Sean. I think the reason you're doing that is that it's kind of the most aggressive area. And it does have a lot of upside over time, but I think you're overweighted to that area. What my opinion here, and again, this is all just opinion based. I'd probably at age 40, if I were you, I would look at one of the. I really like the life cycle funds they have, And okay. I'd look at the L2040. So that's the life cycle. Says that you are planning on starting to pull money out in the year 2035, which would be, again, that's 20 years from now. You'd be 60 through the year 2044, which is the way they think of it. And it gives you it gives you a nice balance. It gives you a little bit in government. It gives you about 20% government, 6% overall total bonds. So it's about 25% in bonds. It gives you some safety and cushion. And then the other 75% weighted towards U.S. common stocks gives you the growth of our market. So you have about 40 in U.S. common stocks, about 15 in small cap, and then the balance around 20 is international. So I wouldn't be 70% in international like you are. I would have this a much better overall balance, similar to the L2040 life cycle in the TSP or Thrift Savings Plan. 404-872-0750. Ryan, where are we headed next here? We're going to Janet in Atlanta. Janet, good morning. How can we help?
Hi. I've heard you in the past. I'm a self-directed investor. I've heard you mention in the past, and I can't remember if it's an ETF or an index fund. That is a collection of, you know, regularly long-time dividends paying stocks.
Probably SDY. If a company,
Sam
David Yellow. That's an ETF that effectively is mirrored off of what is called the Dividend Aristocrat Index, meaning that if they mess up a dividend payment in any in over the last decade, if they have to lower a dividend, it can't be, the company can't be eligible for the ETF.
It's called the Dividend Aristocrat.
Well, it's based off the Dividend Aristocrat Index, but the symbol on this ETF is SDY.
Okay.
And that's sure. I think that's what you're probably looking for.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Janet, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. That is a fun Money Matters. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. You can go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com, or you can email me directly, me and the whole Money Matters team, radio@yourwealth.com. That's just radio@yourwealth.com. A lot coming up this week. We've got the GOP debate, must-see TV on Thursday night, of course, starring Donald Trump. And then we have Jobs Day on Friday, where we're expecting another 200,000 to 210,000 new jobs for the month of July. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful Sunday. We'll see you next week right here, 9 to 11, for more Money Matters with me, Wes Moss, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.